The next case on our calendar is 97714, the Long Beach Association, Inc. versus Stanley Jones et al. Versus Ray Preka. Mr. Files.
Good morning, Your Honors. I will do just a very short summary of the background of this case, the facts in the case, because I understand the court, you've all read the briefs and the fact situation. Basically, what we're talking about here is this involves a dedication in a plat in a subdivision called Long Beach, subdivision Block B of Long Beach Subdivision. The sole issue on this appeal is the construction of a dedication in that plat, which says, quote, to the lot owners within the subdivision, close quote. I'd like to reserve 5 minutes, which I will keep track of the time.
Let's assume you're right that language is ambiguous. Why shouldn't you be barred on the basis of laches?
Two things on the laches argument, Your Honor. Number one is that the language is not ambiguous. It's our position up here on appeal. The Court of Appeals did say it was ambiguous, and it had to be determined by a trier of fact.
So right now it's ambiguous.
All right. Under the case law at present, it is the ambiguous law of the case. However, that's the issue before this court. Is it ambiguous? There has been no cross appeal by the appellee. In other words, they haven't contested the issue of laches in the trial court or at the Court of Appeals. They haven't continued that on up here. They did argue it at the Court of Appeals. Therefore, that's not even before this court, that issue.
Well, sure, it's part of the case. It started out as part of the case, and obviously it's been years and years and years that your people knew and participated in this. With other people joining in into the Lagoon project. Why shouldn't we just say that they were well aware of it, they knew it, and whether A and C are different than B, and whether B should be included in A or C, all of that is important, but you're out. You've been sleeping on your rights for a long time.
Well, number one, in addition to the fact that it's not before this court, and I would obviously, our position is that it would be improper for this court to rule on that basis because it hasn't been briefed by us. It was briefed by the appellee. However, they made no cross appeal, and therefore it was not an issue. The sole issue on this appeal, that this court granted the appeal, was solely on the basis of the construction of the language in the plat. And was the language ambiguous? Or does it, as I have argued in the appeal brief, does it go solely to the issue of who are lot owners within the subdivision?
Did our entry say that? Our entry didn't say that.
Well, you granted the appeal, and those were the only issues raised on the appeal, and the appellee didn't raise this issue of laches in their memorandum of support of jurisdiction, or in opposing jurisdiction. They said...
But us granting jurisdiction brings the whole case before us, doesn't it?
That's not my understanding, Your Honor. My understanding is you have to appeal a particular issue, and only those issues that are appealed are before the appellate court. That's always been my understanding.
Would you think we wouldn't look at the record in the trial court?
Well, there is no record in the trial court other than
the argument,
affidavits and memoranda and so on and so forth. Yeah. That's correct. But the affidavits clearly demonstrate, and this is right in line with the other case out of Ottawa County, which I cite in the brief, on a yacht club in which exactly the same issues arose, and the evidence by way of affidavits clearly establishes that there was no real interference with my client's use of the lagoon area until such time as 1989 was the first it was raised, and it was opposed at that time, and then it was finally litigated in this lawsuit. But as to laches, there at least is evidence in the record, affidavits and copies of the plaintiffs, the appellees' own records that demonstrate that in fact there are issues of fact as to whether or not laches applies. So that at the worst it could happen, if laches is still a viable defense by the defendants at the time it goes back to the trial court, if in fact it goes back to the trial court for the issue of whether or not the construction is there, then that would be an issue of fact to be tried at a trial, not disposed of on a summary disposition. The big thing, it seems to me, is that the case law, as we've said, and the three propositions of law, the first three propositions of law, that words used in a subdivision plat recorded pursuant to Revised Code Chapter 711 shall be construed consistent with such chapter. Now, the as the defendants, I refer to them as defendants, the appellees, quote Revised Code 711-001 at page 11 of their brief, in which it says, quote, subdivision means, one, the division of any parcel of land shown as a unit or as contiguous units on the last preceding tax roll into two or more parcels, sites, or lots for the purpose, whether immediate or future, of transfer of ownership. It's exactly what the definition fits the subdivision of Block B. This was a large parcel of land that was subdivided into lots. Now, the thing is that taking the Court of Appeals determination that the wording is ambiguous and therefore it's a matter of fact to be determined by the trier of fact, what we have is we have the dedicators, the platters, who platted this plat on October 25th, 1927, they're all dead. From a practical standpoint, how do you determine what was the intent of the original platters? Again, subdivision, as used in 711-06, means the land encompassed within such subdivision plat. Now, to stretch it to mean something else, granted, the general public, laypersons, they use the term subdivision as any group of lots someplace, even though they were maybe divided or developed by more than one person, more than one company, and encompass maybe 8-10 different plats. But the statute clearly says that the subdivision is to be determined, is to be shown by a plat, laying out the lots and the meets and bounds and the descriptions of the width and depth. The trial court said it was not ambiguous, that the terminology in the dedication, which said, said private lanes C, D, and E are for the use of lot owners within the subdivision, he said it wasn't ambiguous. It didn't mean the lot owners within that particular subdivision plat, but the entire area of blocks A and C.
Isn't a plat and a subdivision, aren't those words different and meaningful in their differences?
They can be, but they're not different when it comes to the statute that controls platting of a subdivision. In there, it says the subdivision. And whenever the word subdivision is used within that particular platting record, then I submit that it has to mean what it means in the statute, and that is that particular plat that is being subdivided. If you use anything else, one principle or one basic objective of the law is to get some predictability in the law so that attorneys, when they advise their clients, when they draft documents such as a plat, they can know what they need to do because what the law will probably be. If, in fact, the Court of Appeals determination that it is ambiguous and it's a matter of fact goes back to the trial court, that opens up all future situations where there is any kind of multiple plats, where there is any plat that has been developed by different people but maybe have the same name or a similar name. Are you going to argue in those cases that, well, that's a matter of fact? What did the platter mean when they dedicated certain property in this particular platted subdivision? It throws all kinds of uncertainty into the law. Whereas
Judge Shirk agrees with you in dissent. He says it's not ambiguous either, these words, mm-hmm. and you lose.
Yeah, he agreed with the trial court that it's not ambiguous. It doesn't mean what it has to mean because of the statute as to platting of subdivisions. He says it means entire three parcels. And
if they're not ambiguous and you follow what he says, is you still lose.
That's correct. No question about that. Now, the Jones and the Shades, and these are two of my clients here sitting at the council table, I want to point out that the appellee filed no cross appeal, and therefore no other issues such as latches are before this court. The entire state is a subdivision. If you're going to say that any portion of a subdivision that is then subdivided itself, and there's a dedication within there to anyone who owns lots within the subdivision, let's say, for example, that The state is subdivided into counties, and those are subdivided into townships, and those are subdivided into villages and cities. And if you're in a city, let's say it's Cleveland, and you have a subdivision called Cleveland Heights, and they dedicate property in there to owners of all lots within the subdivision. Now, do they mean the subdivision, which is the city of Cleveland, or do they mean the subdivision, which is that plat of Cleveland Heights? I'd submit when you start getting into allowing terminology to mean something other than the lots and that are divided on a particular plat, you're opening up a can of worms, which will come back to haunt not only the attorneys and the other judges in this state, but very possibly this court. Again, it's very well established in Ohio that the grantees under a plat are the ones who obtain the rights pertinent thereto. Now, how can the lot owners in blocks A and C that were platted on July 23rd, 1923, they then purchased their lots 4 years later, and they purchased their lots under that plat, and that plat gives them certain rights. There are dedications within that plat also, streets, beach area, things like that. Now, they've got those rights under that plat. Then, however, and they paid for those. Case law, again, is very clear that when someone purchases a lot within a subdivision, part of the benefit that they derive from that is the pertinent rights that they have, such as dedicated property, easements, so on and so forth. Now, however, if you then these people who purchased those lots and paid on that basis, now in 1927, Block B is subdivided. A plat is recorded. And this lagoon is set aside for the use of the lot owners within the subdivision. Now, if you allow the ones, all lot owners in blocks A and C to have the same rights in that lagoon as the lot owners in subdivision of block B, they have achieved something for which they have not paid. Now, there's lots of subdivisions that, for example, where they have a clubhouse, they have tennis courts, things like that. What we have is a situation where, I'm sorry, was there a question? No. Is a situation where a developer, maybe not even the original developer, which is the same thing here, by the way. The developer of block B is not the same as the developer of A and C. Entirely separate people. The platters were different people. The owner of this subdivision sells lots, saying, here's a nice clubhouse, there's tennis courts, here's a swimming pool. It is for the exclusive use of the owners of lots in the subdivision. Then the owner decides to develop another section of land right next to it.
Are you using the term subdivision and plats the same?
Plat is exactly the same under the circumstances of this case.
But we have plats A, B, and C, and then you keep interchanging the word association. I just would like clarification on that. Isn't the association something that goes over all three plats?
The association is nothing more than a voluntary association of some of the lot owners, yes.
Okay, I have a question. Is there a distinct association for plat A, plat B, and plat C, or is there one association?
There's one association for all. As I point out, under the circumstances we've got here, the lot owners in blocks A and C outnumber the lot owners in block B by 2-1,
well,
3-1.
Whenever they get together and have a meeting, do they say, well, now we're going to have a meeting and do the business for plat A, and then plat B will conduct their business meeting, then plat C, do they don't have separate officers or any
no.
separate identity other than the fact that you've got A, B, and C all under the same name, all guided by the same folks, aren't they? They elect one set of officers who runs the show for all of them.
That's right? Correct. And obviously the officers, as I point out, the officers that are named as defendants, all but one of them are lot owners in other than Block B, so that they control.
Well, that's the luck of the draw, isn't it?
If you believe that the dedication in Block B was, in fact, to everybody who owned any lot, never bought a lot, in A or C also, in addition to B, yeah, that's the luck of the draw then. However, the land was taken out of Block B for the lagoon. The lagoon is entirely surrounded by Block B. My two clients have lots that are right on the lagoon. I'd like to save a little bit of time.
And the association owns the lagoon?
No, they don't.
Who owns the lagoon? Now, that's the key question.
All right. The defendant points out in their brief that supposedly they own the lagoon now because there was a default judgment. What they did is they filed suit against people that they knew to be dead, companies that they knew no longer were in existence, and then because they didn't come in and answer, they got a default judgment by the judge in this trial court. I objected to it. I filed a memorandum contra, pointed out that it was totally improper and that my clients had interests that they had to have. Judge ignored that, granted them default judgment. They point out that I haven't appealed that. I haven't appealed that because there's no finding that there was no just reason for delay as to that decision. There has as to this one. In this case, it is not a final decision because all of the issues and all the parties have not been fully disposed of.
So an owner in Plat A or Plat C came around this little path for a walk, walked their dog there, they would be a trespasser.
Correct. These were reserved solely for the lot owners in Block B. And of course, there'd be no reason for them to do that. It's a walk that's only around the lagoon, and the only reason that it's there is for access to the boats.
Maybe that's your answer to my question, but did you know the trial court had some difficulty with your argument? And one of them was that he couldn't understand the unjust enrichment argument. How is the association unjustly enriched because all association members have access to the docks in the lagoon when your clients already have their docks? The argument here is they don't like other boats coming in docking next to their properties. Isn't that what this is about?
Well, not only that, but taking up space in the lagoon that is legitimately that of only the lot owners in Block B.
So Block B owners took up the space in the lagoon, that would be all right. They even had larger boats than the A and C dock people. They'd be all right.
They have a dedicated right to that. They paid for it. And I also point out that the money that they received from the lot owners in A and C, they make the argument that they have paid to maintain this lagoon. Actually, the records, their own records, demonstrate they got more money from the dock rental in the lagoon than they ever spent on the lagoon, whereas they collected less money for dues from the lot owners in blocks A and C than what they spent on blocks A and C. In other words, they are not only using the land that is exclusively dedicated to the use for my clients and similarly situated Block B lot owners, but they're taking money out of it and for the benefit of their other blocks A and C.
Thank you, Mr. Files. Ms. Lay.
the subdivision at that time referred to B?
The subdivision referred to the Long Beach subdivision, which includes all three of lots A, B, and C.
Were they all platted and recorded